Welcome to Lifelines Radio, a production of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Executive Director of the Federation. With me today is author extraordinaire Karina Fabian. Karina, welcome to Lifelines Radio.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Tell us, what prompted you to start writing?
Well, actually, it's a great story because Lent is coming up. And back in 94, I think it was. No, I guess 96. We were military, just had come back from a tour in Japan. I had gotten out of the military to raise our two children at the time and was getting a little stir crazy, not having a lot of adult conversation, two toddlers in the house. And I distinctly remember right before Lent, I was reading this novel and it was not one of the author's best works. And I was so mad because I knew he could do better. And I knew I could do better. And I'd always wanted to write. So I told God, you know what? For Lent, I'm going to give up reading. I will give up reading fiction and I'm going to take up writing. And you tell me where you want me to go with this. By Easter, I had a regular job with our Diocese magazine, and I was writing both stories and nonfiction for several local and regional magazines. And that got me started. And then I've always bounced between fiction and nonfiction. Now I'm doing more fiction, because it's really what I love. I love working with the characters. I have so many of them in my brain that the only way to keep my sanity is to basically excise them onto the page and clear the way for the next story.
So, speaking about the next story, tell us about your upcoming series.
All right, so the series that I am publishing right now, I do self-publish under Laser Cow Press. And this one is called Madness of Canaan. It's actually a revision and reprinting of the Mind Over series that I had published with Dragon Moon Press. I got the rights back, and so I'm republishing it as Madness of Canaan and fixing it up a little bit. And it is a paranormal fantasy about Daryl Steffens, who has psychic powers and has not been able to control them and ended up in a mental institution. For years, he has fought the unwanted thoughts of fellow patients, the manipulations of a psychiatrist who, well, actually does believe him, but wants to use him to replicate his abilities. And he has two alien minds trying to contact him, who are certain that he is the chosen one to save their world. Problem is, they're on opposite sides of an interplanetary war.
Is
Enter.
just fascinating. Oh my
Yeah,
goodness.
that's just where it starts. So Joshua Lawson is a new intern at the South Kingston Mental Wellness Center, which is where Daryl is. And he practices neuro-linguistic programming, which basically says we will meet the person wherever they think they are. So if you think you're psychic, okay, you say you're psychic, let's figure out how you can still function in society, even believing you're psychic, and lead them out of it. So inadvertently, he's teaching Daryl how to build mental shields, and basically he's pulling ideas from pop culture and fantasy novels, but they work. He also encourages him to have a conversation with these alien minds that are contacting him. And it turns out that one, the Miscrea, also known as Tasme, is not just this disembodied presence, but an actual living woman and leader of their world. In the second book, this is a trilogy. In the second book, he tries to flee the asylum and accidentally teleports to Canaan, taking Joshua with him. And there they discover that the two planets are at war. And worse than that, the two planets are basically in such bad orbits that they are going to collide soon. which is part of the reason that these two are at war. Daryl falls in love with Tazme. Joshua does finally get home. And then when Tazme is pregnant, Daryl discovers about the planets and also discovers that Miscrea, Tazme, is supposed to use her mental abilities to push the other planet out of the way at the price of her own life, the life of their child, and half of the planet. And Daryl's obviously like, no way, you're not killing everybody. You're not killing yourself. We're going to find another way. He brings Joshua and Joshua's fiance to Canaan to help him figure it out. And of course, in the end, through many great sacrifices, I won't give any spoilers, they do manage to save the day, bring the worlds into stable orbits, and stop the interplanetary war.
Amazing. Now, how do you decide on the genres you would work in?
Well, they're the ones that I love, that I grew up with, and they just fit the stories that come into my brain. Right now, I'm writing science fiction and fantasy because I have some great characters in both worlds. In addition to The Madness of Canaan, which incidentally is coming out, the first one came out in January and the last one comes out in April, so they're coming out one a month on Amazon. I also have a long-running fantasy mystery series with a snarky dragon who is under the employ of the fairy Catholic Church, comes into our world and is solving mysteries and trying to control chaos when magic and technology mix very badly. That's the DragonEye series. And of course, like I said, it's fantasy. Then I'm a big Star Trek fan. And just for fun, I started doing Star Trek parodies with my own characters and universe. And that has become a long-running series called Space Trapes Hold My Beer. So I also have done, at the request of an editor, I did a comedy horror. It was Need a Life Zombie Exterminator. And then I did a hard sci-fi at the request of my husband. And then, of course, I have a series about nuns who do search and rescue operations in outer space.
Incredible. Now, where do you get the ideas for your stories?
Oh, where don't I get ideas? I honestly don't understand this question because they never stop. I have files of ideas that I can't get to. I mean, I've got a rom-com, I have women's fiction, funny and serious. It's really a matter of choosing which ideas sound like the most fun to me. So they're everywhere. They just come.
Well, that is wonderful. Now, how do you work pro-life themes into your stories?
I would not say that I work them into my stories
Okay.
because of who I am and how I was raised and the whole Catholic imagination. And the whole, Catholic world that has infused me, they just come out of the stories. I don't plan them. For example, in the Madness of Canaan series, you've always got to have some kind of conflicts and things. And I wanted a conflict in the Beeline romance, which is between Joshua, the intern, and Sachko, who is the only psychiatric nurse that Daryl trusts in the asylum. And of course, you want them to have troubles. So Joshua actually came to this institution, which is halfway across the country from where he lives, because he was running away from a bad breakup. And it turned out that his girlfriend, he would had kind of fallen away from his Catholic beliefs, but and his girlfriend got pregnant and she decided to abort the baby and then didn't tell him until afterwards. In fact, somebody else told him. On the other side, then, Sachiko got pregnant by her boyfriend, who was the main psychiatrist, the one that's trying to manipulate Daryl. Well, he was also manipulating Sachiko and essentially convinced her that it was in their best interests that they not have a child now. And she got the abortion, and he was very standoffish, and she came to her senses, and she's still dealing with a lot of that. So they were both coming from a very hard place because of abortion. And it wasn't something I necessarily planned. It just sort of seemed to evolve. And so then as they were coming to terms with their roles in this and the horrible mistakes that they made, and then finding ways to forgive each other and to move on and to understand what happened in that. Then, of course, on the other side, the A-line romance where you've got Daryl and Tasmay and they're having a child, and she's an alien. She's been raised for this role of pushing the other planet away because it's happened multiple times in the past. And someone always comes who has the mental ability to be able to do this, but like I said, at a great cost to their world. But their world accepts that. It's like cutting off the leg to save the body. As far as they're concerned, Daryl comes in with a new point of view saying, no, we are not following the old ways. I'm here. I believe differently. I'm not letting my wife die. I'm not letting my child die. I will find another way to save everyone. And then, of course, when Sachiko and Joshua come, they're like, yeah, we're not going to let people die here. We'll figure something else out. And they try several ways to do it, and before they actually persevere. So,
You're listening to Lifelines Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher. We are speaking today with author Karina Fabian. Karina, what do you hope your readers come away with?
I'm an entertainer. I'm not looking to infuse anyone with, I don't think I'm going to make somebody change their lives because of my book. I just want people to have a happy escape. If they get something more, then that's a bonus. That's God doing the work. My job is really just to craft a great story. And here some of the compliments that I get. I actually pulled a few up. Someone wrote me, today I found the short story. I mean, this was flash fiction. It was like less than 1,000 words. I found a short story about Vern, that's my dragon, marking Ms. Beautiful Environment's Lexus. It had been a really rough morning. Let me give you a moment about the story. In this story, a woman knocks on Vern's door, and Vern lives basically in a heap here in our world. It was an abandoned warehouse, and he's been given it. And he's stuck with it. So she comes and starts telling him that he really needs to clean his yard. And he's not sympathetic. Later, he hears her screaming and realizes that she's been mugged. And one of the things that she was telling him to stop doing was scratching people's buildings, which he was doing to mark them as his territory, saying, hey, I'm on patrol, which is working. But so she gets mugged. He scares off the muggers. And then she looks at her car and says, would you mind? And he scratches her car for her. So my friend that wrote this, my fan that wrote this, said, it had been a really rough morning. So I got why Vern was frustrated when someone showed up to complain. But then he helped her out when she was in trouble and even got her purse for her. And for some reason, that cheered me up a little.
That's beautiful.
And then I've had people who have said, we were on the way to the emergency room and we just grabbed one of your books on the way out. And it was the best thing ever. Another person told me that when they were on tornado watch, you know, last year when they had those tornadoes in the Midwest that were just like one after the other, she said they were in the basement for hours, but the time went quickly because they had the book. And so my books distract people, you know, from the fear, the stress, even sometimes pain. So there's no lofty goals here. I'm having fun, and I just hope my readers have fun too.
That's beautiful. What do you think is the secret to your writing success? Because you are a prolific writer. Tell people how many books that you have written or have published.
I think I am on 54. I lost count for a while.
Wow.
I think the last time I looked, Amazon said I had 54.
Oh my gosh.
So most of my stuff now is self-published simply because it gives me the freedom. Like for example, the Verne stories especially. Sometimes I want to write a full novel, sometimes I want to write a novella, sometimes I just write a short story. And publishers, you know, they want books to stay a certain length because they want to build that expectation. But the stories dictate how long they're going to be, and I don't want to fill them or have to, you know, add extra stuffed fluff to make it fit. And so this gives me the freedom to do that. Also, it gives me the freedom to publish fast. So I put out a couple of books a year at least. I try to always do a Dragon Eye and a Space Traipse. And then if something else comes to mind, then I'll do that one too. So, but I don't know. It's, I have a great support system. My husband is keeping us well fed and well kept. So I don't have the full-time job. My kids are grown. So for the most part, I don't have to look after them, and sometimes they even look after me. And the ideas just keep coming. So I just, there's the old saying, butt in chair, hands on keyboard. And that's the important thing. So,
That's
yeah.
remarkable. So, what advice would you have for a young person who is considering writing as a hobby or as a career?
First thing is, all right, let's start with hobby. Hobby is easy. Enjoy yourself. Have fun. Don't let it take over your life. Looking back, even though I was not writing at this pace, you know, when my kids were little, there were times when if I got a sentence and by the night I was fine. But I still wish that I had spent a little less time writing and a little more time concentrating on them. But so don't let it take over your life, especially if you're in the hobby status. But enjoy yourself, learn the craft, get and receive critiques. It's important, you know, you can have somebody critique you, but if you don't pay attention to them, then you won't improve. So learn your craft. If you are looking at this for a career, the first thing I would say is have an alternate means of income. It is possible to make a good living on writing. I have a friend who makes a healthy six figures a year on his writing, but this is after many, many years and many, many other day jobs before he finally hit upon the secret sauce. So again, practice your craft. Learn to market. Learn how to make a name for yourself. Learn how to attract the people who are going to love your books and how to stay connected with those people. Because if you don't have that, it does not matter how brilliant you are. It does not matter how unique you are. It does not matter if you have written the greatest American novel. If in this day and age, if you don't have that outside presence, which means social media, which means newsletters, which means websites, and means active followers in the triple, quadruple, quintuple digits. If you don't have those, you're not going to succeed financially as a writer. You're not going to have a career just off your books. Now, having said that, success as a writer is relative. I went through this back in 2016 where I almost gave up writing. I felt like I had given it my go and I was a failure as a fiction writer. I was doing very well as a business writer, but as a fiction writer, I felt like I was failing because my books did not sell well. I was getting minimal royalties. I was traditionally published at the time, and I felt like I had failed my publishers because obviously, if I wasn't making money, they weren't making money. And like I said, I almost gave up and I had to sit down and say, well, why am I doing this? Because there was a part of me that says, I can't give up. I just, it hurt to think about it. And I had to think, well, then why am I feeling so bad about this? And it was because of the financials. When I took that out and I said, you know what? There are women who spend hundreds of dollars on knitting, on crocheting, on collecting little elephant figurines. Why do I feel like the thing that I love to do, I have to be paid for? So I said, you know what? I can afford to put money into the formatting and the polishing and the cover art and all of that and take my books back from the publishers so I get rid of that guilt, put them out myself, and tell myself, you know what? God can define my success. I'm just going to go out there and have some fun. And in the meantime, if my family needs me to, I can get a job. I got writing jobs doing other things that paid. But I freed myself from that. And oh man, that's when I took off. That's when I went from like, a handful of books to 50 something now.
Oh my goodness. So, in addition to your success in writing, you are also involved in comedy. Tell me how that transpired.
I've always been a ham. I am a humor writer. I love public speaking. And so a few years back, I thought, you know what? And I'm 57 right now. A few years back, I thought, you know, I feel like I'm getting a little stale. And I was also feeling like I don't have a lot to bring to the table conversation-wise with my husband because all I ever talk about is my stories. It's like my stories and the Catholic Writers Guild, these are my two things. And I thought, I need more stuff to talk about with my husband. I need to be more interesting. And so I said, I'm going to take a comedy class because that sounds like something fun and different, but still in my wheelhouse. So I went to the Orlando Improv. Now it's called Funny Bone. And they have a terrific teacher, Carmen. And so I learned the ropes and we did a class performance at the Funny Bone. I got to be third, which I felt like was a real compliment because I wasn't the very first person out, but I was well before people got too drunk to laugh at anything. So, and I loved it. I had a great time and I had a lot of very interesting conversations with my husband, but most of them were about things that I simply cannot repeat to a Catholic audience. So I learned a lot from that class. Things that I probably should have learned in high school, but I didn't hang around those crowds. Comedy people can be very interesting.
Yes.
But it was a lot of fun. And so I do a little comedy here and there. I've done a couple of big performances for the Catholic Writers Conference. I did a performance with my church. We had over 200 people there, so that was a lot of fun. One of my other friends from the class opened for me, so it was big. And I would love to do more. I haven't gotten any bites on the feelers that I sent out, but that's another one where I'm just going to have fun, and God can decide where the success lies.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah,
So
like I said, I'm a lucky human being because I'm biased, but I married probably the most incredible man on the planet. And he is
Mm-hmm.
doing exactly what he loves, which is building rockets. And so he's able to do that and earn us a good living so that we are comfortable. I'm not desperate to make my writing pay us or my family.
We've got just a couple minutes left, and I'm wondering if you can let people know where they can find out more about you and your writing.
The easiest place is to go to my website, which is karinafabian.com. So it's just my name. And you can also sign up for my newsletter. It's on the website. It's the very first thing you see. But if you want the direct link, it's fabianspace.com, fabianspace/substack. Subscribe. I mean, now I gotta look it up. I had this and then I. Well, you know what? Here we go. Fabianspace.substack.com/subscribe.
There you go.
And that is my newsletter. I put out a Verne story every month. I have a long running serial from the Space Trapes, which kind of follows the relationship arc between Lieutenant Ellie Duwall and her fiance Todd Andmore. And then once a month, I talk a little bit about my books, about my life. If I have a class that I'm teaching, I will promote that. So that's the best place to get to know me. And I also will give you a free book. If you're curious about my books and don't know where to start, this is where to start. Sign up for the Substack, get the free book because it's a short story collection from each of my universes. So you can read it and go, ooh, I love this character, and then go to Amazon and start on that series.
That's wonderful. And we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Karina Fabian so much for being on Lifelines Radio today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And remember, there is always a reason to choose life. We'll see you next time. Take care. Bye bye.